Spring is in full bloom. Are your finances? With the Chime Secured Credit Builder Visa Credit Card, you can build credit with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments, all with no annual fees or interest. With Chime Secured Credit Card, you can start improving your credit scores right away. Get started today at chime.com/build. That's chime.com/build. Chime. Feels like progress.
The Chime Credit Builder Visa Credit Card is issued by Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and OTC advance fees may apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Iced Coffee Hour once again. My name is Andre Jack. I'm joined here by my two co-hosts. What's up?
Graham Hola. And Jack.
Graham and Jack, that's right.
Graham. Welcome, guys. Hey, how's it going?
We can't skip this without talking about what happened.
You were in a fight.
I got in a fight with Michael Reeves.
Oh, my gosh.
I lost.
He said he didn't want to save money, and you were like, that's unacceptable. I will fight you.
I tried to teach him a lesson, but he's too quick. He dodges. He bobs his head back and forth, and he gets a few good shots.
He's got that Pacquiao blood in there.
He does.
So in all seriousness, it was iDubbbz like a charity match.
Yeah, it was called Creator Clash, and I think there were eight or nine on each side, so 18 total people who boxed each other.
Wow.
And that was just a few days ago.
Every time I try to explain this Creator Clash to my non social media friends, they're like, I don't understand, why are YouTubers boxing each other? Can you help explain why? What is this fad? What is this trend? Like, what's it about?
Yeah. I don't fully understand it either, to be honest with you. I don't get it. I think it's just so different, and it's interesting to see the people that you watch fight each other. Like it's probably the most like unorthodox thing you could ever imagine, is take someone from who makes videos behind a computer screen to like fight in person against someone else who you watch.
No, you're right. It's like it's like people that are not professionals. It's so interesting to watch them go at it, because you're like, wait, these are not pros. And I actually watched the event live. I was rooting for you, but thing that I will say that I is hard for me to watch when I watch boxing for like amateur sports is there's a certain level of fear that's expressed in people's faces that I don't see in pro boxing. Obviously, they do it professionally.
Yep.
But like normal people, I know I would have that same look. Like if I step in the ring, like I'd be scared. Mm-hmm. And it is that, it's like, oh, you could tell this, like these people sometimes, like they're scared. And it makes it harder to watch, but yet interesting at the same time. It's a weird dynamic.
So we definitely applaud you, Graham, for sticking with it and getting in the ring.
What
were the nerves like right before you guys were going to fight? Like when they're announcing your names, how did you
no
feel?
Nerves. No so nerves. I was so happy. Yeah, okay. I explained it on the podcast, but basically my nerves were so bad. I explained it like a bell curve.
Okay.
So in the very beginning, I wasn't nervous. The closer I got, the more nervous I got. And then the closer I got to the event, the less nervous I got, because I was so scared that every day was like another day closer to getting it done with. And so like that day I was like, finally, like tomorrow it's going to be done. And I'm like counting the hours. It's almost done. So by the time I was like about to walk on, I'm like, finally, I could get this over with. Cause I'd been dreading it for such a long time and so scared and so nervous, like losing sleep, having like these panic attacks in the middle of the night. Like I had one dream where they were counting down, the bell rang, and I was like on the stage, and I just like pass out. I just faint on stage. Whoa. And when I fainted on stage in that dream, I woke up. I was like, I'm in bed.
Oh my God.
And I had a panic attack. This was like 3 o'clock in the morning, and my heart was racing, and I could not get it to like settle down. So that was the worst of it. But then anytime even thinking about it, I get nervous. It would throw me off. I just have to like calm myself down.
Well, I could tell you didn't really want to talk about it, because anytime I'd bring it up, you just shot it down.
I told everybody, don't mention it. I don't want to hear about it. I know. Just don't mention it. Don't talk about it. Because it would set me off on this path of anxiety.
Yeah.
Where I'd be like, oh, now I'm thinking about it. That there's 30 minutes gone but now, every time you mention
Graham,
it.
Graham, is it true that Michael stopped posting on YouTube just to train for this?
He's not posting? He's joking. No. Oh. Yeah, look at his posting schedule. He never posts.
Okay. Okay,
he never. No, it was a joke because it's like he'll post one video a year.
Oh, got it. Got it. Okay. Yeah. That's fair.
No. Yeah. For you, you know, in terms of your performance, did you even care or were you happy or were you unhappy? Like, you know, in terms of that whole game?
I definitely cared.
Okay.
I think in the moment, there's so many things that, like, you forget everything, unfortunately. And okay. I think that's just something, like, you were mentioning the pro fighters don't have that fear.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's because they've done it so often without the crowd. Like, they might do a boxing match in front of 50 people, mm-hmm. but they'll do that so many times before they're actually anything that people would watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for me doing that, I mean, it's just like everything I learned was...
How many people were there?
10,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah, sold out. Like a lot. Yeah.
Sold out. It was the first time they said they've ever sold out that arena was for
that's
that event.
That's insane.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
And so it was like, it was not only the people there, but it was also, no matter what I do, it's going to be viewed probably a few million times. And so like, I became super conscious and super aware of like how I looked.
Mm-hmm.
Probably terrible thing to do, but... I was really just like self-conscious about like, did I throw the jab right? And so everything that I learned really within 30 seconds, like that's out the door. I'm just going to survive.
Will you ever box again?
I'm going to continue the training, but I'm not going to step in a ring. I mean, it would just the anxiety that I went through. It's just not worth it.
Okay. Yeah. That's fair. That's fair.
But I have to say like, I really enjoyed the training. So I'll continue training. And
was there anything you learned that like you learned immediately after the fight? Was there something that you discovered about yourself or any like newfound discovery after the experience?
Probably that I guess nothing is as terrifying as that in comparison. So for me, that was like such a high threshold that everything else just pales.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for me, I think I just have a new level of confidence that like nothing is that bad. Like nothing will be as bad as that.
Mm.
So if I can do that, I could do anything else. And so that's kind of what I've taken away from it.
Were you surprised by his ability in the ring?
Good. He was good. Mm-hmm. The first round, I felt like I got this. Okay, this is good. But he just went into this like attack mode. That second round, and my gosh, he's got the stamina,
mm-hmm.
and he was technical. I mean, you could tell all the fighters, he really dedicated so much time and really got it down. And, he was just great in every way.
You know who gets the biggest heart award for that night, though? It's iDubbbz, which is really Ian, right?
Yeah, Ian.
Dude.
That doctor guy was a monster.
I would not want to fight him. He looked like an actual...
He looked like a real boxer.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, like his right. body, his shoulders, his back. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, and maybe he... I don't know. Did he take it easy on Ian? I wonder that.
Because
I'm like, dude, he looked like... No disrespect to Ian, but they look like they shouldn't even have been sharing the same ring. Like that.
But I will say
monster.
Ian could take a punch,
yes!
man.
Yeah. He's a warrior.
He's got a steel chin because I would have been dead after that first.
Yeah.
And he was dead tired. He has a lot of heart, man.
Yeah.
He has a lot of heart. He deserves, like, just for throwing, you know, my gosh, man, crazy.
You know, it's nuts. He said that he's going to do it again.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's doing Creator Clash 2.
Wow.
Which, I'm going to be so excited to be in the seats and watch and not be in the ring. I'll be so happy on that. But he's going to do it again. And I think for him, where they went wrong, and he's mentioned this too, is that he boxed above his weight class.
Sure.
So, like, he had to put a lot of weight just to get in the same range as Dr. Mike,
mm-hmm.
where he probably should have been slimming down and fighting in a smaller bracket.
And he still looked a good like 25 pounds lower, you know, than that Dr. Mike guy.
I will say, I think my favorite fight to have watched though was Justin Minks versus the other girl.
Yeah,
like, that was crazy.
Yes.
That one.
The girls fighting was just nuts to me, man.
Yes. that to me was the most intense I've ever seen. I was watching it on the monitor and just, I couldn't believe it.
That girl's nose was done.
Wow.
It was bad.
Could not believe it. And then afterwards, apparently, Macy Sarr just hanging out with everybody, like right afterwards.
How did you feel afterwards? What was like? What
went
did you
right
feel?
Back to the room.
You just went back to the room. Yeah. Did have you like physically hurt or
everything? Everything. I was out of it. I mean, I just could. I not that I couldn't talk, but you're so just mentally drained that I couldn't think, couldn't put together much of a sentence. All I wanted to do was get in the shower, go to bed. That was it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dang, that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I thought I'd be like, oh yeah, afterwards, maybe we could all go out. Just no. Oh gosh, no. But Haley did.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, hey man, you're a winner in my book to have done that. That takes so much courage.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's awesome.
Well, there is Creator Clash 2. So I'm just saying you guys can apply if you would like to.
I couldn't do it because I know how much work I couldn't lose. So my thing is like, I would be so embarrassed if I lost. So I would train every day. Like my life was on the line. And I know like, cause I competed in high school and football and then track in college. Like I know what it's like to push myself so far beyond like what your body's like. I would pass out every day. Like after track practice, I would throw up every day. And so like, I know what I would push myself through and I don't want to do that. Like that's,
it's interesting it's you so say intense. That because I echo that same thing because I would take it overboard. Like I would stop YouTube completely. Like I would just not do anything. Yeah. I would focus that on that. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing, and I think the biggest reason is that mentally I'm not there because I feel like to be your best self in boxing, you have to be angry.
Yep.
And you just want to prove something to win.
Yep.
Like you have to want it. And I don't feel that. I'm not angry at anything particular. So I just don't want to win.
Neither was I.
Yep.
So I don't know if that.
I think that's helps to it, to be honest. You have to be angry and like just, I just want to smash my opponent and like prove something. And I just don't feel that.
Well, if there's someone you would fight, who would you fight?
Nobody.
Nobody. Can you name a name? Can you get somebody
nice
out there?
Try. Andre calls out so-and-so.
Just give us a name.
Nikocado Avocado, you're watching this. My challenge is still on the line.
We told Alex he could fight Nikocado.
Oh my gosh.
That would be an amazing fight.
Oh, that's the one that eats a lot of food, right? Okay.
Yeah, the mukbangs.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I would find him.
He would never agree to do that, but...
Crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Funny though.
Well, that's awesome.
Respect, man.
Other than that, what's happening in the market, Jeremy?
The market?
Holy smokus. It ain't no jokers.
We're starting to come back, but I don't know, guys. We'll see what happens. It could go up, could go down. We'll see. No, but in all seriousness, we're bouncing. Last 3 or 4 days have been really good in the market.
Can I tell you why?
Why?
I'm being serious.
Don't tell me Jack sold.
Jack sold.
Oh my God.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That's all it took?
Yeah,
that's
he sold. So we posted our video announcing that Jack had sold his stock, especially his Robinhood stock. That's been the contention point between me and Jack. He sold his Robinhood stock. We posted that video at 1 p.m. At 1:10 p.m., Sam Bankman-Fried from FTX announces that he's taken a 7-8% ownership stake in Robinhood. It goes up 30%.
You're kidding.
10 minutes after we made the announcement.
How is that possible?
What?
And since he sold the market, right back up.
Oh, my God. This is all it took. This is all it took?
I told you.
I had to lose millions of dollars just for this? Jack.
You did tell me.
Yeah, and Sam makes that investment. FTX US, our sponsor for today, by the way. He makes that investment, and FTX, from my understanding, wants to get into stocks as well, which is amazing because they are the crypto exchange that's trusted by millions of users around the world. Millions! And also some of the lowest fees out there. And Graham, take it away.
Jeremy, you are a natural at these integrations. Where do you get it from?
Week by week. your skills are rubbing off on me slowly, okay?
Anyway, FTX US is obviously the sponsor of all of our episodes at this point. So we really appreciate them. If you're interested in signing up, they are one of the largest US regulated cryptocurrency exchanges in the world with more than 6 million users who buy, sell, track, and trade both cryptocurrency and NFTs all in one place. They have no withdrawal fees. They have no ACH fees too, and they have no gas fees on the top Ethereum and Solana collections. So if you want to be a part of them, the link is down below in the description, and you get free crypto on every single trade you make over $10. So
referral code MMFTX.
Thank you.
MMFTX, make sure you plug that in, and
get yourself some free Doge.
Yeah, and they partner with Steph Curry, Tom Brady, Coachella, and the Miami Heat Arena.
And Jeremy LeFave.
And Jeremy LeFave.
That's
we should have just mentioned Jeremy first.
Yeah,
Jeremy, Steph Curry.
Just anyway, guys. Tom Brady.
For real, the link is down below in the description. If you want to support the channel, support FTX, and that link is there.
I want to come back to the market, but you mentioned NFTs. Where do NFTs stand, Andre? Because I know you've obviously dabbled in NFTs a bit, and you're a little in that community.
Yeah.
But in all seriousness, with crypto being a very tough place,
yeah,
stocks being a very tough place, Where does NFT stand in this whole situation in the next 6, 12, 18 months?
It's interesting. Somebody asked me that recently, and the way that I compared it to is the same as like art, high-end art, where it's like you could, let's say you owned, I don't know, a piece, you know, a Banksy piece, right? It might be worth whatever, a couple hundred thousand dollars or whatever it is, but it's really only more worth depends on what you have. Yeah. But like it really only is worth what someone's willing to pay for it because there's no liquidity and it's not getting exchanged on the markets 24/7. Mm-hmm. So NFTs are just one of those things where, like, let's say you had a Bored Ape and it was worth whatever, $300,000. Doesn't mean that your Bored Ape is $300,000 because it doesn't mean that someone's going to buy yours.
Yeah,
they might buy something else because they are not fungible, right? So that it doesn't mean that you could liquidate yours very quickly. Mm-hmm. So even though the prices have been falling, they're kind of relatively stable-ish in relation to everything else.
Okay.
But I think to liquidate and actually sell it and get your money back and out of it is really hard.
Okay.
It's not quite like real estate long, but it's going to take a while to sell.
Interesting.
I wouldn't even say that. I'd say probably 99.9 is just worthless.
I think eventually it'll 1%. Get there. Yeah, for sure. Eventually, I think that'll happen. I don't think it's the case yet.
Are there still, like, let's say Bored, what the Bored Apes, are those the biggest still?
Like, yes.
Jeremy's like, the Bored Gorillas?
The Bored Monkeys?
The Bored Monkey, what is that Bored Monkey?
What does this have to do with AMC stock?
What does it do with silver?
Silver. I lost so much money on silver. That was my worst investment.
Tell us about silver. How's that going?
Awful. What? How could I buy silver and it goes down that much?
How's it? How much has it gone down?
Over 10%. You're kidding. Yeah, and I haven't even held it that long.
That's why you bought it. So that it doesn't.
Did Jack buy silver the day I bought silver?
Gosh, that must have been it.
He got a silver coin.
But
I don't know.
But from the beginning, it's just like it shocked me that it should just be cash. I mean, the marginal loss that you make from inflation is not worth the risk of putting it.
Yeah, but silver does way better over a 10-20 year span than cash.
Not necessarily.
It does.
But if you look over a 10 or 20 year period, you're not going to be in silver. You're going to be in stocks or anything else.
That money is going to be an emergency fund. Yeah, exactly. That's emergency fund money.
But it lost money right now.
Exactly. Yeah. So if I had an emergency right now, I'm screwed. It's like the 100K is now like, I don't know, 80.
But I feel like, I feel it was almost treated as an investment. Like you're investing the emergency fund in a way that
beats at least inflation.
Yes.
Right.
That's the goal, is that emergency money is like, your dollar is being destroyed all the time, we know. So the goal is silver appreciates over time. So that 100K, let's say, is all of a sudden worth 110 or 120 over time, right? But it's amazing that as soon as I put the money in, it's just down in a straight line. I'm like, seriously. But to be fair, I think almost everything was in a straight line since then, stocks.
Yeah, but you would want to invest everything in something that's at least hedged against that. So if everything else is falling, at least that's somewhat stable.
Yeah. There's not much gold and silver is about
cash. Just cash.
That's not investing.
I'm investing in the sense that I'm not. My loss is going to be somewhat predictable. I know I'm not going to lose 20% next year. I know I'm not going to lose 2%.
Last words.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if we see 20% inflation, people could comment, "Oh, this is aged like milk."
No, I'm just saying if it's an S&P 500, if it loses.
No. I'm talking cash.
Oh, okay.
Like I know with cash, my opportunity cost is simply the inflation, but I'm never going to have to worry about it. I just, whatever inflation is, that's, and who knows, maybe year over year, inflation could come in at 3%, maybe 2%.
Are you going a little cash heavy now?
I'm just investing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had way more cash at the beginning of the year and then I paid taxes. Mm. And then I have another probably 500 grand going in. I'm making a new investment. I don't want to jinx it yet, so I can't announce exactly what it is, but it's in a totally different industry. Alex, just bleep this out.
Yep. Undisclosed investment.
Oh,
I know which one. Yeah. That's cool. It's a good one.
It's a good one. So
it's official. You're doing it.
So far we agreed on the terms, but I don't jinx it until we actually have a signed contract.
That's fair.
When that contract is signed, I will talk about it. Until then,
did you get a hookup? Did you get a good rate?
I would like to think that what I got was fair.
That's cool.
All things considered.
That's awesome. Is it going to be in Vegas?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How did you get that? I thought it was no more Vegas.
No,
spots.
No. It's a Vegas opportunity.
Sweet.
Anyway, no, I'm not holding on to as much cash as I would like.
Okay.
Because I did that, and then I also got a now I could talk about it.
The Tesla.
I got a Tesla Roadster.
Oh, you did. Cool.
Yeah,
it's
got
official.
A Tesla Roadster.
Is it here?
No, it's not. Okay. So it'll be here probably anywhere between a few days and maybe a week or two.
That looks exactly like your Evora, though.
No.
Oh, it's a different body shape?
No, yeah, it's a completely different body. I mean, the Tesla is based on the Elise chassis.
Oh, I thought it was the Evora.
No, but, and I made a good deal on it. So I sold my Tesla stock, not all of it. I sold a third of my Tesla stock at $1,028 a share, thinking that the car is going to be better than the stock. The stock is down over $300. So that car now costs me significantly less than I paid because I wouldn't have sold the stock if I did not buy that car.
That's fair.
So
that's cool.
Great purchase so far. So far. Now, knock on wood, we'll see.
Can't wait to not see you drive it.
Listen, it's a piece of art and it's meant to be appreciated.
Okay. Piece of art.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's a rare one.
That's what I say about my NFTs too. Listen, it doesn't matter what the price is. It's just meant to be looked at, okay?
You need to stare at it.
Is it really a piece of art, or is it just because it's the first Tesla?
Piece of art. I mean, it was groundbreaking. For what it was, Elon Musk went into that car thinking he was going to be a quick slap from a Lotus Elise to a Tesla, put a battery in it. Turned out to be way more difficult than he imagined, and they completely had to redesign the entire car to fit what Tesla would be able to call their Roadster.
Yeah.
So I think there's so much history behind that. It was the first all-electric vehicle people saw on the roads that was available
for
sale.
What's the range on that?
About
70?
No. Gosh, no. 160, 170 miles.
That's not
still?
Bad.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, I thought it was down to like 80 or 90 after all these years.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't weigh much. So
Jeremy, they do because of the batteries.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't Tesla the only car company to not have declared bankruptcy ever in history?
I believe Ford. Also, if
I think it's declared bankruptcy.
Don't think Ford ever did.
No?
I think they've made it through.
Okay.
Yeah, somehow. And I remember in the Great Recession, I think Ford went down to like $1 a share. Mm. And they barely escaped. I think GM and the rest of them all went under.
Okay, that's fair.
And then
so one of two then.
Yeah.
Wow. It's cool.
My understanding. Yeah, crazy to think about. Can I fit in the Tesla Roadster?
Yes, with the top off.
With the top off, okay.
Is it a button, or do you have to physically remove it?
Physically remove it. It's a soft top, so you just like click the two little buttons and roll
that's
it up.
Cool.
It's, yeah.
Are you gonna wrap it?
No.
Okay.
No.
It's yellow. It's cool.
It's yellow. So it's the same color as Jeremy's.
Oh, cool.
Model
it's like
X.
A bumblebee. Nice. Yeah, that's cool.
But I mean, yeah, I wouldn't want to wrap it. The thing with the yellow is that there's only 26 that were ever made in yellow.
Whoa.
That's it.
How many miles?
22,000 miles on it, something like that.
Whoa.
But yeah, one of 26, but apparently from what I'm told, I think 5 or 6 of them have already been salvaged, totaled, crashed. So there are less than 20 still in existence that are yellow.
That's crazy.
It's the rarest color.
How much was it, if you don't mind me asking?
I'll save it for the video.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Main channel or?
Main channel.
All right.
Yeah.
Nice. How I got this Tesla for free.
Oh.
Very close.
Yep. It's going to be the follow-up, right?
There's a huge twist to this car that you'll have to watch the actual video to see, but it's there's no other video like it. I'll put it like that. And there's no other scenario.
That would be
where
weird if there was. Like, there's another Graham buying another yellow. That would be like, whoa.
There's another Graham that buys another yellow. I want to meet that person.
Dang it,
I'll
dude!
Bring
you
him on the
beat
channel.
Me to it.
I'll bring him on the channel.
I'll bring him on the channel.
Oh, gosh.
That's awesome.
And that reminds me, how do you make it on $60,000 a year with a family?
What are you talking about?
No, I was just saying.
What?
How can you do that? How can you do that, gentlemen? How can you make it? If you got a family,
don't
you make
$60,000
a year.
I don't know.
No, they'll appreciate it. They'll make money. No, but in all seriousness, I'm looking at inflation. I'm saying, how can people make it out there on $60,000 a year? Guess what? The average income, roughly 60.
Is it? I thought it was 44 for the median. You're talking about household income?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we're 60-ish, aren't we? Somewhere around
there. Yeah, 60s for household. And I know median is 44 or 47. I think it's 44.
Okay. Yeah. So you're probably looking at about $50,000 a year after tax.
Yeah.
So how can you make it with a family on that?
Well, step one.
So you're talking about $4,100 a month.
$4,100 a month.
Okay. I would just assume that probably about a third of that is going towards rent. So that's the thing. You're at probably $1,200 to $1,500 a month in rent.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
looked the statistics up recently. One bedroom right now is $1,750 and a two bedroom is $2,065.
Where? Just average US?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So how are you?
I mean, it's tough because in a state like California, the the honest answer is you probably have to work to make more money. I mean, and not like, I don't necessarily mean work more hours, but
yeah,
enhance your skills, shop around. And I think it's just about, all about job hopping.
Okay.
Or going into an industry where the pay is higher. Because this doesn't exist.
I mean, yeah, let's just say Vegas.
Doesn't matter. I mean, yeah, but even in there, Vegas, you're not finding a place for $1,230 a month in rent.
Yeah.
Especially as a family, unless you're having roommates or
just, or everybody just sleeps right in one room. Yep.
I'd say probably the best ROI you're going to get, you probably would
it's
have
to. It's crazy
to
think though, like $60K a year with a family, you're in massive poverty. You're going to have to get a really like low place and have one bedroom, maybe two bedrooms max.
But it depends on the location too.
That's usually considered poverty. Like if you got a family and you're all sleeping in one room, or maybe you got two rooms, that was usually traditionally thought of, you're in poverty. And I think somebody that makes $60,000 a year.
I don't know, man. 60, maybe in New York, but not in the Midwest.
Well, we just say Vegas. You know,
really? I don't think so. 60K is pretty good here.
Well,
I think what's throwing you off, what's throwing you off is, I think, the family aspect, because you would assume it's two parents, probably one or two kids.
Yeah. We could say,
you know,
two kids.
So we're talking like four people surviving on 50,000 net after tax.
Yeah, it gets hard.
Including
for sure.
Expenses.
I just imagine you don't save much. You just not
there would be
much.
Probably very little left over. If anything. Of that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because, I mean, if half of it's probably going toward your rent or your mortgage, and then insurance is kind of a wild card because it's like, is that paid by the employer? How much do you have to pay in that?
Here's a hypothetical question for you, Jeremy. Let's say you didn't have YouTube.
Yeah.
And you were, working at Quick Trip still.
Yep.
And let's say you were making $60K a year.
Yep.
What would you do right now, considering your circumstances? Imagine you don't have your houses and you're not just normal. What would you do? Would you focus on working more? Would you get another job? Would you work two jobs? What would you do?
Yeah, I would have had to do something else eventually. I would have had to start my businesses, because there's just no way. When you're younger or you're single, 50 or 60 seems fine. But yeah, once you add in, you know, a spouse, and let's say you want the other one to work as well, right? Okay, that's fine. Now you need childcare for your kids, and the childcare cost is insane. Like, you know, for daycares and all those sorts of things, it's so expensive. And so a lot of times, unless your spouse is a baller and makes like 100K, you're not even getting much of a benefit. Like if your spouse makes 30, 40,000, shoot, man, most of that can end up going to childcare alone. So I feel like, you're stuck with either like getting a second job or trying to hit it big at the place you work and like get promotions, or you got to like start your own thing, your own businesses and whatnot.
Yeah, but you wouldn't take the risk to start your own business like that with
a family.
Family and kids. I mean, just imagine that business.
I would personally, but I don't think most people
would.
So
personally,
that,
you would actually focus on creating a business.
How would you do that? If you're working, let's just say you're working 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
And then you have another, let's call it 5 hours a day left to yourself. And that doesn't even include any time you spend with your family.
Yeah.
How would you do that?
I almost feel like you got to kind of leave your workplace, unfortunately. And as long as you got a nice nest egg, saved away.
But let's say you don't. Let's even assume you have 6 months of a nest egg. I don't even think that warrants starting a business. I mean, just the risk that you drain that, and then the business doesn't do well, and then you're stuck with now no nest egg, no money, no job, and a family.
Let me just say this real quick. When I left Quick Trip, I had around 200,000 in stocks, but that was about my whole net worth because I didn't have real estate or anything back then. And I only had one kid, and I took a full year off. Plus, I got into trading and all types of things. That 200K over that next year in like 3 months before I started my real estate marketing company went all the way down to 40. That's all I had left.
Based on your trades or?
No, I lost 75,000 in stocks because I was doing all these margin trades earnings trades and things like that. Because then I was like, shit. And then I was having to support a family. So in a year and about 3 months, I went from 200,000 net worth to 40K.
Wow.
When I started my real estate marketing company. Yeah. So it went down there quick. So.
But 200K goes quick. Like is actually a lot in relative comparison to what I would imagine most people have, especially in their 20s.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was about to say, that's like a pretty hefty amount. That's, I mean, that could buy a property somewhere.
Well, and look at how fast it went, though.
So Graham, what would you do if you didn't have YouTube? You're making 50K a year right now, considering your circumstances. You're pretty lean. Do you start a new job? Do you do something else? Do you do real estate?
I mean, if it's just myself, I'd probably be something in sales.
Okay.
It would have to be something where I could scale it up and just probably make more money would be the best answer. And yeah, usually sales would be a good way to do that if you have the interest in it.
Would you do real estate then?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would. That's fair.
Yeah, and I mean, I know a lot of us don't really talk about this, and it's probably overstated in our space, but yeah, high income skills. I mean, that's where you have to focus. You know, that's where I focus on stock markets, a high income skill, you know.
Did you guys see Warren Buffett's advice during times of high inflation, what he said? That is the most important thing you can do.
What was it?
He said to be good, to be really good at something unique and to be good at something that others are not.
Yeah,
that makes and just sense. To focus on that.
Yeah.
And yeah, my superpower, it's interesting, before I started YouTube was to live so lean. It was it's probably like unhealthy level, but it's a skill that I learned that I feel like very many people don't have. Mm-hmm. And so like I lived like a college kid basically. Like I think I turned down every gig I was ever offered for, you know, to make an income just to focus on YouTube. And I remember 2018, I reported an income of like 12K or something ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So like imagine living in Vegas at like 12K. Granted, this was like before all the crazy inflation, but still, that's a ridiculously low amount to live
on. Yeah, your rent was how much? Like $400 a month?
No, my rent was $1,200 a month.
But you split it.
I subleased it on Airbnb and I was more than covering my rent.
Cool.
So I was doing that. Even though I couldn't afford my rent, I got a place that was slightly nicer than I could afford because I know I could just turn that into a little side hustle, which was nice. And then I shopped at the 99-cent store. I cooked my own meals. I didn't go out to eat. I didn't party. I honestly didn't even have friends at the time. I was just focusing on just doing something.
Yep.
So I guess I cut back like crazy lean, which bought me some time to figure out what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I think that helps. That helped me at least. As far as like what I would do now, I remember giving myself a year with YouTube, and if that didn't pan out, I'd probably just move back home with my parents, which I realize not everyone has that luxury, but probably then go back to school and learn something in tech, whether it's coding or something like that, take boot camp or something.
That is something I have to say that does take the edge off a lot. It's just knowing that you have parents that you could at the very least sleep on a couch.
This is true.
So that even if you go back down to zero, you're not going to be on the streets.
Yes.
And you're always going to have like a roof over your head. So you always have like a backstop if things were to ever get that bad.
Yeah. No, that's
that I think
thought,
is really important.
I'd be on the streets before I went back to my parents.
Would you really?
Yeah, 100%.
Dang.
100%. I'll sleep on the streets if I got to. Anything to not go, you know, just a different lifestyle. But, you know, I think the reason I brought that subject up is because the subject of that is what millions, if not tens of millions of Americans are going through right now with, you know, insanely high inflation and the average person making, you know, 50K, 60K. And they're looking at it and they're like, you know, how much do you have left over if you got anything left over? And so that's why I brought up that subject. And I think it's like, you know, some food for thought. And it's like, what do you do? You get a second job like you talked about, or a side hustle, or do you try to go back to college, let's say, or get some sort of skill? Because sometimes those can take a while. Like, you know, let's say you go back to college, you know, you're doing that for potentially years. Real estate license pretty quick, but if the real estate market dries up, that's going to be messy.
No, I don't think so. When I started, it was the worst market.
That's true.
That was 2008. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Nobody, I mean, everyone is like, oh, I'm just going to wait because the market's going to go down. And it was. No, I'm going to keep waiting. So like everyone is doing that.
But you think objectively that was the best time to get into it? Like when it crashed?
No, the best time to have gotten into it would have probably been 2004 because everyone was buying and it was so easy to get loans. Mm-hmm. When I started, nobody was buying. So houses would sit on the market for like a year or two. Like that was a horrible time. Mm. But I found a niche in leasing because people weren't buying, so they'd lease a place. So for me, that worked because I was, you know, I didn't have any concept of like, you know, for me, $500 was like, that was more than enough. Mm-hmm. So just even making small amounts, making like $1,000 a month or whatever, that was amazing for me.
What was the first year you made six figures?
I think you did his first year, right?
Year,
That'd be crazy.
No, it wasn't the first year. I think because the first commission I got was like $40,000.
Wow.
But that was almost a year into it. I think 9-10 months into it, and that was luck.
That's
that was a lucky sale. Well,
how much was the house for you to have earned?
$3,650,000.
That's insane.
Now you know it's crazy. Now that home would be worth like $11 million.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh man. Wow.
Good. So it might have been 2010 or so. Maybe you made six figures for the first time.
Yeah, probably 2010. That seems about right. Yeah. That's crazy.
I didn't make six figures till 2017. I started so far behind the eight ball than you, Graham. It's not fair, man. You were out here balling out of control. And I was just a poor boy.
You're the one with the silver, though.
Trash can. Yeah. Yeah. You got all the silver. I have to buy silver so I can compensate.
I feel like I'm being low key dissed right now because I wasn't even as good as you, Jerry.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, I mean, six figures to me always was like that ultimate, like,
wow. It kind of is just for, I think that's the dream, right? For everyone, just like to make that six figure mark.
Yeah. Seven figures, I never even like dreamt about that. I dreamt about having six figures in net worth.
Yeah.
Not like making seven figures a year, but like six figures was always
it's so crazy. I used to visualize my portfolio because I was in the exact same scenario. I had 200k saved up by about 28 or so, 200k net worth, and I was like, you know, at this rate, if I just coast fi, right, if I just coast on it, let that money sit, I'd probably become a millionaire in like, I don't know, let's say 25, 30 years, something like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm happy with that.
Nice.
Like never in a million years that I imagined I could exceed that, but that was partially being at the right place at the right time, doing the right thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And having a high income skill of breaking down something that not a lot of people know about.
Right, so exactly.
That matters.
Which speaking of, this is a totally random transition, but I'm going to kind of hijack it here. One of the things I used to do when I leaned, when I cut lean and I stopped spending was to make an income, is I used to go to like hotels and I would perform for their corporate events and like executives at the Wynn. And I would show up and for 1 hour, they used to pay me about $2,500 to show up and do card tricks for all their executives and like employee award ceremonies, things like that. And so the reason I bring that up is because this week, from Sunday to Wednesday, there is a convention in town called Magic Live.
Ooh.
So I got this little badge right here, and it's at the Orleans at the casino.
Oh, yeah.
And so there is like thousands of magicians all around the world that just flock there right now, and they're just all there.
Wow!
And they're giving workshops. They're teaching each other magic tricks. It's a crazy environment. So I'm just like going around, learning, soaking it up, and it's so cool.
Wow.
That's really neat.
It's a little fun little
Do people recognize you there?
Yeah, but only when they do. I don't know if it's for magic or artistry or if it's for finance.
Yeah.
I'm like, they're like, "Oh, I'm a big fan." I'm like, "From magic?" Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of interesting. It's really cool. One of the decks of cards that one of my friends makes actually is these. They're called Cardistry Touch.
Okay.
Check out how cool this little mechanism is. So once I open it, voila, a little deck of cards pops out.
Okay. For that.
That's kind of cute. Heck? Yeah, yeah. And these cards are actually specifically made for what's called Cardistry, which they don't have faces or pips or numbers or court cards. They're all the same. So it's made for an art called Cardistry. Whereas like in Magic, for example, I would have you pick a card, right?
Yep. Right.
In this case, I don't do pick a card tricks. I just do like manipulations, right?
Oh,
which kind of look like this.
Yeah. What can you show us?
Check this out. So,
wow.
So, I love that. When I travel, sometimes I ask people like how they shuffle around the world, right? Like, how do you shuffle? So, in the Vegas casinos, for example, they might shuffle cards like this, right, on the table. Here in the U.S., we might shuffle like this as well.
Mm-hmm.
In India, this is called the Hindu shuffle, which looks like this. Right. Then one day I went to China. I gave the cards to this kid and I was like, "Hey, how do you guys shuffle here?" And he showed me this. He's like, "All right, check this out." So he took the cards and he just like mixed them all like face up, down, right? Like crazy. Let's see if this works. So some cards were back to front, front to back, right?
Mm-hmm.
See, back to back, front to front, all over, right? Boom, watch. Oh, snap. They're all the same way.
Wow.
How'd you do that? How'd you do that?
The method for that is so much cooler than the trick.
You know what? I'm guessing as you're flipping them, you're probably, you know, flipping and switching your hand or doing something so that they're always like
that. Well, he's certainly doing something. Yeah, but what he's doing.
What's cool about that trick is that I'm taking advantage of your brain's assumption. When it sees something, it thinks it's seeing one thing.
Yeah.
But what I'm actually doing is a discrepancy, and I'm doing something completely different. It's so fascinating.
You're explaining this Wall Street. I like this.
This exactly
is actually a
that.
Finance lesson.
That's exactly right.
You thought you were watching magic.
I love
watching Wall
integrating
Street.
Magic finance concepts into finance because I think there's so much similarity there.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I don't know, people are doing one thing here, but with the other hand, they're doing the real trick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Sleight of hand of Wall Street over here. But yeah, so this is Cardistry. So these are called isolations. It's nice. Pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
That's so neat.
It's called the Under Pressure Fan.
Wow.
These are called card twirls.
Whoa.
Card flicks. This is a cool one. It's called L cuts. I don't know why they're called L cuts. Maybe they look like L's. Maybe.
Wow.
Oops. And then this is one I came up with. This is called the cylinder. I don't know if you'll be able to get this on camera. I'm going to try.
Whoa.
Nice.
Yep. And then this is called the spring. This is a crowd favorite. If I was standing up, I could show you a bigger one. Here. And
oh.
This is, let me see if I can do this still. It's called the thumb propulsion.
Oh, nice.
Whoa. Bam.
Oh, oh, wow.
Yeah. That's
do they let you play blackjack at the casino?
If I showed that, no. But I could.
I mean, how easy would it be for you to like swap in an ace? Like knowing everything you know like this, would it be easy for you? Or
probably not with this technique. It's so funny because so what I just showed you is called cardistry, right? Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting Graham asked that because that's the assumption that I'm really skilled. Well, like mm-hmm. it looks like I am, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess I am with cardistry. Mm-hmm. But people then put the assumption that, oh, he must be good at like cheating at games, which mm-hmm. is a completely different study of magic. Mm-hmm. That's more of like the gambling side,
oh, yeah.
which incidentally I could do, but it has nothing to do with right. this.
But you could.
But I could, yeah.
Okay.
That's what we call having high income skills, yeah. my friend.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, one of the things I did was for Nat Geo for in New York, we were shooting an episode for Brain Games. And one of the producers was like, okay, so Andre, this episode, we're going to pick pockets. Mm. I'm like, what gave you the idea I could pick people's pockets? He's like, well, you're really good with your hands. Like, clearly, this is easy. And I'm like, no, this is a completely different profession. This is not what I do. It's so interesting.
You just hang out in New York City, don't you? Just take people's wallets out of their back pocket?
Well, there's also something called put pocketing, which is the opposite of pickpocketing. You put things in people's pockets and then you do like crazy revelations. You're like, oh, it's in your pocket.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It reminds me of watched Ocean's 11 recently, and you know the scene when
he goes up to
Julia Roberts and he like slips a little phone in her pocket,
yeah.
and all of a sudden it's ringing.
That's
later
put
on.
Pocket.
She's like,
that's
this?
Put pocket.
Yeah. That's cool.
My friend Apollo, he's like world class pickpocket. He's called a gentleman thief, and the stuff he does is like insane. He like manipulates your attention. He could steal from you, and he tells you beforehand, "I'm gonna take your wallet."
No.
And in 10 seconds, he has your wallet, despite the fact that you know you're about to be robbed.
What the heck? That's like next level.
It's insane.
I'd love to see that. Love to see him take a watch.
Oh, that's his specialty, watch steals. And the way that it's done is so fascinating because you get accustomed to having your wrists grabbed.
Yeah.
Because part of what makes it hard to steal is you have to invade people's personal spaces because they're not comfortable when you're like up in their face.
Yeah.
So you do that through showing them tricks. You do these things that make them comfortable to get them relaxed. And then you do the real work.
What?
And it's just, and even though I could tell you this, you'd be like, okay, cool. Now I know you're still going to get pickpocketed. Oh, it's so cool. Yeah.
It's like,
I want to see that.
It's like when I tell people, you know, don't panic when the stock market is crashing, you buy, and then people still panic and sell. So
exactly. Well, so much of it is though. So much of it is like market psychology. Have you seen those memes where people are like lined up? There's like, there's Bitcoin and there's two lines. It's like Bitcoin at, you know, 70,000. Yeah, there's a huge line. Bitcoin at 20,000. There's like a person.
Oh gosh. That's intense.
Andre, I see there's a box you brought over here. What is that?
It's actually a watch that I just got from as a gift. Someone.
You really think there's a watch in there, but little do you know.
Oh, it's empty. I already pit potty that.
It's a bar of silver.
Yeah. I already stole it.
Yeah.
I want to see your friend put a bar of silver in my pocket. Yeah. That would be cool.
So I know, Graham, you're a watch connoisseur. Yeah. Actually, Jeremy, you are too.
No, sir.
Yes, you are.
No, Jeremy is there. Definitely not.
Dude, you have like a fancy watch.
I have a few fancy watches, but it doesn't mean I'm a watch connoisseur. I don't know crap.
That's
about
a Frank Muller.
Yes, that is accurate. Which means, obviously, I clearly don't know about watches because the Rolex snobs are like...
No, that would be if you owned a Hublot.
Oh, yeah. I heard that would get disrespected.
That's a big watch.
That's what she said.
Can I take it off?
Yeah.
That is huge.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's a 42 mil, I believe.
Yeah. Look at that. Oh, I love it. You know what? It matches my date dress.
Does it?
It's the exact same. Wow. Same bezel. Yeah. I think this is the white gold. Bezel.
Yeah, it is.
It's a white gold bezel. Blue dial.
Yep.
I love it. Can I open it?
Yeah. Steel edition with the blue face.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is it sized?
It's not sized for me yet. It's a little big on me.
Look. It's engraved on the back.
Yeah.
Oh, is it? I can't see.
Michael Jackson. Oh, yeah. Michael Jackson.
I see it.
All right. Can I put it on?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Obviously, it's not sized for me. Yeah. That's way too big for me.
Really?
Yeah.
I love it. It's perfect.
Yeah. See, it looks too big on my wrist. You put it on, man.
All right.
Congratulations.
I appreciate it.
I love it.
This is my first nice watch that I've ever owned.
You'll keep it forever.
I will. I don't think I'll sell it.
No.
Wow.
You gotta probably take another link off that.
I do, yeah. Just one link. I haven't sized it yet, but yeah, mm-hmm. It's the Skydweller.
That's a beautiful watch. Yeah, I really like it, and I like that it's... this one seems a little bit understated.
We buy a lot of stocks. We buy, you know, crypto, all that stuff. And that's going to go up over time. But in the short term, there's no guarantee it's going to make money, right? Stuff like this, like Graham just mentioned, you could buy a Rolex. Most models, essentially, if you can do it at retail, you've essentially doubled your money.
Yeah.
Now, at what point do you tell people that is a better investment versus just going the traditional route of like first accumulate your stocks, whatever? You know, you fill up your HSAs, your Roth IRAs, all that stuff. At what point do you cross the line and you're like, you know what? We know right now, if you can buy a Rolex at retail, it'll double your money. So just go do that first if you can. Is there a point of responsibility?
I mean, realistically, by the time you get to the point of buying Rolexes at MSRP,
yeah,
it's going to be so trivial in the big picture.
Not necessarily. Let's say if you had $20,000 to your name and you saw somehow you're able to get on a list for a Rolex for, let's say, $12,000. Yeah. You buy it, it's worth 40.
Yeah.
At what point are you like, do it? Don't.
Well, but then you ruin the relationship with the Rolex dealer for
would you
going
really?
And flipping.
Okay.
Well, you would. I mean, by flipping the watch, so you get a one-off deal, but then they see you flip it and they're not going to sell you the next one.
But is that worth it?
You know what? Yeah, no, I believe in the right situations, if it's a one-off thing, but you damage that reputation.
Right.
But that's how a lot of people get started, either collecting watches or flipping items. There's a lot of
The reason that I ask that is because sometimes people ask, you know, they're like, hey, do you have any financial advice for me? And sometimes when I think about it, like, yeah, I can give you the whole traditional cookie cutter thing. But sometimes it's like, if I really want to be creative with it, like, what would I say?
Ford GT and a Rolex.
Ford GT? Fractional Ford GT? Is there
fractional
such a thing?
Fractional Ford GT and a Rolex. Good, man. That's all you need.
I don't know. So sometimes, like, you ever think, like, how can I help people? Like, what kind of advice can I give them that's beyond just, like, the cookie cutter thing they could see anywhere?
Yeah, but those opportunities aren't there for everybody. Otherwise, everyone would be on a list. Everyone would flip them. I just think by the time you have these opportunities, it's not worth pursuing every opportunity that comes up like
that's fair. Yeah.
So it's still better. The traditional approach, index funds.
Index funds are the devil.
With cash on the sidelines. Cash.
Yeah, you need some cash or silver. but index funds are the devil.
Oh, Jeremy.
Why are they?
Okay.
They remove price discovery from the stock market.
Yes, exactly.
So, Jeremy, that benefits you then. So you should be thanking index funds because they remove the price discovery.
They give you better returns.
imagine this. Imagine a scenario where everybody in the world's like, we just got to buy index funds. They would do no good. They would collapse literally our entire financial system.
Nothing would collapse.
Oh, it would collapse everything.
Why would that collapse?
There would be no money raised from stocks on the come up or anything. It would completely collapse VC.
First of all, that would never happen. But let's just say if it did, you would find that one person who says, you know what? there's all this opportunity that people are ignoring. I'm going to do that. It's going to make more money. And it does. And then people see that. Other people flock to it. There's going to be a checks and balances in place.
Yeah.
And sure, even though some companies might get a little bit more advantage, there's always going to be price discovery. If anything, index funds, I think, Jeremy, are doing a favor. They're allowing more price discovery with other stocks that people are overlooking. Like me, for example, I'm blindly buying index funds, not even looking at the price. And I'm doing that on a regular basis. That is an investor that you just took out of the market competing to look for undervalued stocks.
Yep.
I made everyone else's job easier now.
Yeah. Sounds like Jeremy just got served.
It just doesn't mean it's bad. There's still the devil.
Why is it bad, Jeremy?
Oh, because it's like I gave you the example of real estate last week, and you're like, oh, if I could buy all the real estate in America and like some fund or something. Yeah, but the S&P 500 is not that. You're putting your money, 6% is going into Apple, 4%, 5% is going into Microsoft.
It's like
saying we got the 500 most expensive homes in America, and we're just going to invest in those homes. The crazy condo in Manhattan and this home in Beverly Hills and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, that doesn't really benefit all the rest of the homes out there. You're just putting your money in those most special properties.
Yeah, but those companies are also making the most money. And they're also serving the biggest audience. It would be like saying, you know, you're buying the most land. It's like, obviously, a bigger portion of your money is going to the bigger portions of land that happen to have a house on it with the companies.
Hold on. Why is my brain not following how the market's going to collapse? Where's the disconnect?
So if every single person in the whole world said tomorrow, I'm only going to put my money in S&P 500 index funds, that would essentially... No one's putting money in VCs at that time. If the VC market collapses, every single one of these companies...
Oh, gosh, you're assuming everyone is spending every disposable dollar, you're saying.
No. Every investable dollar.
Okay.
If you collapse VC, then you collapse Robinhood, you collapse Coinbase, I'm just putting it out there. I'm saying if every single person did that, you collapse everything. Everything would collapse within... like a year.
So you're saying it's better not to do that.
I'm saying, if every single person,
but everyone's not.
That makes as much sense to me as saying if everyone ate their dollars, the world would have no dollars. It would collapse.
No.
Like how? Why no. though?
If everyone only lived off water, we would die after like 20 days.
No
water. Need food.
There's this notion that you have to put your money in index funds.
Okay.
Or you're like not doing good or something like that. And I'm just fighting against that notion of like the index fund.
I don't think that's the strongest argument against indexes. I think individual investing has its own merits, but that is not one of them.
Okay.
I think the fact that you get to be a shareholder, you feel like you own an individual company. There's a part of that investing experience that gets brought out with buying individual equities.
Yeah.
The fact that you get to be a voter. The fact that you can try to find, you know, discounts
in
the market.
I think it's the thrill of finding a deal.
Yeah, it's the thrill.
But imagine this, Jeremy. What if I guaranteed to you will make more money?
We talked about this last week.
Let me just say the example. You don't have to answer it if you don't. But let's just say over the next 20 years, let's just say 5 years. We'll do 2 years. Over the next 2 years, I guaranteed you'd make double the return with an index fund. Would you do it knowing that guaranteed you'd make more money with the index fund, but you could not buy an individual stock? So you couldn't look for an individual stock, but you would guaranteed be making more money.
No, because guaranteed money is false, okay? First off.
But I mean, this is not...
That's what they told me with Terra Luna, then I lost everything. No.
Oh my
also,
gosh.
Yeah, but it's also false that like not everyone's going to buy index funds. I just believe index funds appeal to a certain portion of the population that doesn't have the desire to pick stocks, knows their own limitations and doesn't want to think about it, but they want to ride and bet on the entire market as a whole. And that's taking that portion of the audience. But there's always going to be people out there who would rather say, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to find my own deals. I enjoy the process.
I think if we really break it down, I'm just kind of in my feelings right now, more than likely, because index funds have held up better than obviously individual stocks considerably. And so right now there's this whole like huge pushback about, see, you idiots, you shouldn't be stock picking. This is why you put your money in index funds. And so I think when you got to hear that constantly, it's like you're ready to like push back a little bit.
I get that.
I think that's what it is. So,
but it's funny because you're a winner 1 year and you're not the next. That's just kind of part of the game.
I have a question for you, Jeremy.
Yes, sir.
So you said in a few episodes ago, you're like, let's not respect Mr. Buffett. Well, Mr. Buffett is pro index fund. So
aren't you in a way disrespecting the legend Warren Buffett when he's advising like whatever it is 98% of people not to invest in index funds or to invest in index funds?
Yeah. So I think the reason Warren Buffett says that, I think it's very important. The reason Warren Buffett says that is because he understands that most people are not going to research companies and they're not going to put in that work. They're too lazy. Just bottom line. And so that's why he says that. And he's like, if you're too lazy, then just put your money in.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
He understands.
He can't do the research, but most people aren't. And he also understands most people aren't going to hold through the tough times, which is something you have to do as a stock picker and buy the dip. And when you already lost money and you lost money and you lost money and continue to buy that dip. Let's say you're like, I see the stock. It's a great value at 50. It falls to 40, you buy more shares. It falls to 30, you buy more shares. It falls to 25, you buy more shares. That's a very, I think, select group of people that can actually do that and actually have that.
Sometimes I wonder if Warren Buffett's success is a byproduct of his own time. Mm-hmm. Where I feel like back when he made his fortune and back when he was, you know, the Oracle of Omaha, which he still is, but I would argue that back then when the market was simpler and there weren't like derivatives and complex financial instruments, you could actually look at a company's balance sheet. You could look at everything and say, this is a cigarette butt, like he referred to him, right?
That's a good point.
And you could actually analyze those companies because the numbers were what they were.
Yeah.
Nowadays, the market is like this mishmash of so many complex instruments and so many derivatives and so much leverage.
Short
that, like, how do you even quantify that in your estimates for what stocks are worth? Yeah. So I feel like nowadays, the reason he is so revered and successful is partially because he has such a huge canon of money to influence prices, and his reputation precedes him in the way that like investors follow his moves.
Yeah, that's true.
So if he says something goes, people follow, then of course it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. No.
Delta was a great example where he sold his Delta stock, price fell, and airlines, then now look at it, like he would have been better off holding.
I would say that was a qualitative analysis that I think anyone could have done. I'm talking about like quantitative stuff that people use to assess risk.
That's a good point. I think nowadays, if you look at like the markets when he was coming up, right, the 60s, 70s, 80s, and you look at the market nowadays, it's maybe more complicated than it's ever been. It's maybe more volatile than it's ever been. But Graham kind of brought this out just a minute ago. If there's more volatility, there's more chance to get richer faster than ever before.
Right. It,
like the swings on both sides are more vicious. Like the drops are like, oh my gosh.
Right.
But then you get a Tesla stock, for example, like that stock should have been appreciating like for years, but it didn't. And maybe part of that was the whole short seller situation and a lot of stuff that held it back. And then it goes through this insane boom where it goes up like 2000%. Right. And so I don't know. I feel it on both sides, but also, I mean, 1987, there was a day when the S&P 500 fell 22% in a day.
Right. But my point is that situation with Tesla probably wouldn't have happened back then, to the sense that price would have been suppressed for so long despite the fundamentals.
Yeah.
Whereas nowadays you see this kind of black magic, sorcery in the market a lot more.
It's true.
So it's interesting because like if you have a thesis, for example, with Tesla, like you did early, right? Yep. You bought in. You were technically right that it would appreciate like crazy from that point on.
Yeah.
But if you had sold and you didn't keep your stocks, then you were wrong.
Exactly.
So it's like, I don't know. Yeah. I just feel like so much of his success has been built on a simpler time that is so much harder to translate nowadays.
Yeah, even Tesla, I think my first shares I ever bought in Tesla, I think there was one point when I was down 50% on those original shares.
Yeah.
Now I kept buying and kept buying and kept buying, and I bought Tesla, I don't know, 8 or 10 different times, lower and lower and lower. But yeah, and I think that's why Buffett says, because I don't think the average person's going to be like, have that type of confidence to be like, I know I'm right on this.
Right.
I'm going to continue to buy and buy. I think most people just are like, dude, I'm keep losing. Every time I put in money, I lose more. I'm selling.
Right. Well, have you ever thought about his cash position? I don't know how much cash do you have? Like $150 billion at some point?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? And then when the market appreciated like crazy, is there ever a point at which you're like, hey, dude, you kind of missed like 50% run up. Like, at what point are you like, you were wrong to have all that cash?
Oh, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So with Buffett, he has to hold a certain amount of cash always because of the insurance businesses. And we're talking like—
But is it $150 billion worth?
I think it's like 60 or 70.
Is it that much?
Yeah, it's a huge amount that he basically is like pretty much untouchable money. So then everything like, I think over 70 or so is like, yeah, that has potential.
Okay.
So But I want to show you guys a really interesting chart, and I'll send this to you, Alex, so you can pop this up in the video. And I'm pretty confident you guys will have never seen anything like this before. Mm. But essentially what this is, it shows you numbers of companies trading at a discount to net cash as a percent of the total stock universe.
So, okay, can you explain to a layperson what that metric is?
Okay, so essentially it's a company's trading under like how much cash they have versus their liabilities, essentially.
Okay, got it.
And if you notice, and I'll show you here in just a second, Andre, this number hit over 3% right around the bottom of the market going into 2003. And 2003 through about the summer of 07 was a great time to be in the market. And then right around 2009, the beginning of 2009, this hit a high of a little over 2.5%. And then recently we've touched over 3% as well. And so it doesn't mean we're absolutely at a bottom right now in the market, but it means we're likely closer to a bottom in the market. You can take a peek at that there, Andre.
Mm. What are we, so the higher the graph, the...
Yeah, the more likely you're near a essentially bottom in the market, essentially.
So what does this describe? So this is just how much cash a company has on hand?
Yeah, versus their liabilities and the percent of companies that are basically, you know, trading under that, essentially.
But don't you think a lot of that could be fueled by low rates if they're taking out loans, locking in at a low rate, that could influence this, and maybe those need to be paid back?
Yeah, that's a good point. How
well we that don't would be debt on the measured. Balance sheet, because you're also minusing out liabilities.
But what he's asking is about as far as the debt cycle goes. If the debt cycle of that company was locked in at a low rate, is that figured into account? Because once the debt cycle expires and they have to refinance,
yeah,
they're going to have higher rates. Would that chart then drop?
Not likely.
Okay.
Because are you saying if a company has debt, is that accounted for in there?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's accounted for because they're subtracting out liabilities.
But what I'm saying is, does it take the interest rate into account?
Interest rate, it should.
It should,
well,
right?
I mean, in terms of like, if you have, every company has different interest rates.
Right.
So it doesn't really take that into account, but that doesn't really have anything to do with that graph.
Well, it has everything to do, I feel like, because if interest rates were borrowed and locked in at low rates, once they expire, they have to refinance, they have to pay their dues, and now rates are much higher.
Yeah.
So, but they still have those liabilities. They still have things to pay. They have bills to pay. So they still have to borrow money.
True.
So but would that influence it?
Well,
considering
it doesn't influence
rates.
That number, but it can influence other factors.
Right.
And so, I mean, but also you could say, you know, a lot of these companies probably refinanced debt or did whatever with debt, you know, a couple of years ago. Maybe that when the debt expires in 3 years from now or 5 years from now, maybe it's a lower rate. You know, I think you can take that both ways. So, but that particular chart, that doesn't have as much to do with like interest rates and things like that.
Okay, that's fair.
But yeah, it's just another interesting thing to kind of look at out there. Because a lot of people are trying to figure out, are we close to a bottom? Are we not even close to a bottom in the market? Last week, we had one point where the NASDAQ was now down 30% year to date. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people are like, dude, is this a bottom? Or are we dropping 40%? Are we dropping 50%? What is your guys' opinion on that? Do you think, you know, we're anywhere close to a bottom? You think we got a lot more pain ahead?
I feel like we haven't seen the pain in real estate yet, which to me, that's the thing I'm looking at.
Oh, yeah. That'll probably be 6 months, 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
It'll lag.
Yeah. But I feel like when real estate start falling, if it does, that's when people could potentially get even more scared. It's like,
yeah. But here's the thing, though. If the stock market begins to recover, I mean, very well, people could look at that as, oh, it's not a big deal. And real estate could remain fairly consistent.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are counting on the real estate market to fall,
mm-hmm.
And I'm sure it will certainly soften in some areas, but I think a lot will depend on what happens with the stock market and whether or not companies begin doing these like mass layoffs, downsizing, because maybe they overstaffed, thinking that they need
who,
to...
Who
you know,
brought it up last time that Amazon did that? Did one of you guys say
that? Yeah, Amazon
that
recently
Amazon
was
overhired,
talking about,
right?
Yeah, was like almost hoarding workers, rumors about Facebook freezing hiring. Netflix just laid off some employees. Robinhood obviously laid off employees. Coinbase was talking about tripling their staff this year. Now there's rumors that they might not even increase staff in any substantial way.
Wow.
From like a triple to not so, and who knows if that goes the other way. That's going to be 100% dependent upon Bitcoin, Ethereum, and things like that.
So do you guys think layoffs will be followed by if we get a negative GDP second quarter?
I think the two is they're just going to be unrelated. I think layoffs are going to be layoffs. Yeah, I don't think they're going to see GDP going down and, oh, well, now we got to lay off people or it's a recession. I don't think that's going to have anything to do with it. I think the two are separate. I think the GDP is going to decline, but...
It looks like mortgage rates are going to go over 6 or 7 by the end of the summer.
And they should,
which is crazy.
Did you list your house yet?
That's in the process. Yeah, like this week we're going to be on the market.
You know what's crazy? So I've been looking, I look at the market every single day in Vegas. Mm-hmm. And I look at the market between 2 million and like 8. Because yep. I just love seeing what's coming up. You know, I love seeing like what comes up.
Oh, me too.
I love it.
Yeah, it's like entertainment.
The beginning of the year, end of last year, I'd look and I'd maybe see a new property come up every few days. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You look now, there are multiple every more. Single wow. day.
100%. Yeah. No, I'm on it. I'm on it every day as well. Yeah. So, except my price is a little bit more expended. Like it's any price to whatever.
Yeah. Like I want to look at like the $20 million.
No. I'm looking at like normal houses, okay. like you know 200,000.
And look at this. Yeah. So here's the price range of Vegas. We got one 5 hours ago, yeah. 6 hours ago, 10 hours ago, a day ago, a day ago, a day ago, a day ago, 2 days ago, 3 days ago. Yeah. Okay. Whereas before this would be like 1 day, 4 days. 8 days.
Yeah, inventory is increasing. Yeah.
And what's interesting is that in the high price point, I'm talking like over like $4 or $5 million here in Vegas, I'm seeing these substantial price decreases and price cuts. Yeah. So there's one that was listed at like $5 million, and I saw it was like a price cut $700,000.
Wow.
But now on the flip side,
the ultra luxury market is so like just
correct.
Ridiculous.
But the other thing is that a lot of these homes are somewhat difficult to value. And so sometimes sellers will just, I'm going to ask for this price,
yeah, exactly.
See what happens. And they're like, well, I was wrong. I don't care. And,
yeah.
But, you know, it was never worth that to begin with. Mm-hmm. Right. So it distorts things a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Selling prices will be the one to look at.
The worrisome thing about real estate is how many jobs are created from the industry, you know, indirectly, you know, so that's the thing that worries me.
Wait a minute, Graham, a question for you. Do you think that luxury real estate sets any kind of trends? Like I've seen a lot of realtors kind of look at the luxury market if nothing more than other than to see, because they equate the luxury market with more of a savvy investor, right? Someone who's a little bit more money, who understands the economy a little bit better. Do you think the luxury market in any way informs the rest of the market?
I think it does, but I remember back like 2018, we saw a softening in the real estate market where prices across the board went down anywhere from like 5 to 10%. The luxury market got hit harder.
Right.
I would say that would be in Los Angeles, that was like 5 million and up.
But was it first to
down.
Fall or?
Yeah, that began to soften. But I will say throughout the entire time, properties under $1.5 million, zero difference whatsoever, went up in price.
Oh, wow.
So like while the luxury market was softening, the less expensive homes just kept going up.
Mm-hmm.
And in a market like that, sometimes there's like this reverse effect where if the luxury market's not selling as well because people don't want to spend as much money, well, what are they buying? They're moving a step down. They're moving a step down. So now you get all these buyers up here that are now buying in the mid-range, and all the mid-range buyers are buying a little down.
So you could say that if you're seeing increased listings in the luxury price, you could kind of say that that's the beginning of that potentially.
Potentially, but at that same time, we didn't see it decline long enough for there to be a substantial right. effect. But if anything, it made everything less expensive. LA was under $1.5 million, was even busier.
Right.
And the prices just kept going up.
I guess the question I'm trying to ask is for the average person who has no intention, obviously, of buying a $5 million house, could they in any way, shape, or form use that price bracket as a way to inform themselves of something?
Well, 2018, it would have made no difference. I mean, if they did, they'd think the market's softening and then get caught paying more a year later.
Okay.
Probably not.
So probably
not. I would say it's such a deal by deal basis. It's okay. Like the most honest answer I could give is that you want to find the listing that has been overlooked and neglected. And for me, that's always been find a listing with really crappy pictures where the agent doesn't pick up their phone and it's been listed for a while. The seller overpriced it. They reduced the price, but nobody pays attention to a 60-day old listing anymore. And so they're priced where they should be, but they hit the market wrong. They're using the wrong agent. Those are good deals, and you go and negotiate.
That seems
those.
Like there's less and less of
no,
those.
No,
true.
Yeah,
but I don't want to say there's never a deal. There's always right. something that you could do.
What was the average mortgage rate in 2018? Roughly,
probably 4.5%. Yeah. It was in the fours, 4.5, 5.
Okay,
probably 5 on the high end. 4.2 to 5 is what I'd say.
Okay.
Because I remember I got a loan at 4.625, and that was good. I remember at that point, like, I had to move money over. I think it was with Chase. Like, I had to move money over to them, open up an account with something. And I was like, that's a good rate.
Oh, okay.
I lucked out on that. Yeah.
Because, you know, if we're talking about 6 or 7% on average, you know, this summer, you're just in a very different mortgage environment. Plus, homes are far more unaffordable than back then. Plus, you have inflation. So I think we have a lot of things really working.
Yeah, but now you have less inventory. Back 2018, there's way more inventory.
That's true.
You had way more construction.
But inventory can change quick. It's going up, as we know.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, depending on
that's true.
Brackets.
And that's true too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe 2023 is a year to buy real estate.
But Jeremy, you're not, obviously, you're selling. You're a net seller right now.
Yeah, yeah. Correct. Yep. I'd rather get out and, you know, plug the money into stocks right now. Mm-hmm. So this is a year for stocks for me, but maybe 23 is a year for real estate. We'll see. Mm. I think there's a good probability that we could get some real weakness.
Jeremy.
So, yes.
If you want a good investment, I'm being dead serious. This same applies to you, Andre.
Okay.
We got to bleep it out because I don't want to draw attention to it.
Undisclosed investment.
I would say there's a 20% chance that I'm going to try to make a move on that as well. The 20% chance. So realistically, it's not going to happen.
Why is that such?
All right, Alex. Yeah, I want to hear your opinion on this. No, don't mention anything about what we're talking about right now, Alex. But I want to know your opinion on what Graham just said.
Wait, hold on. That's not fair. We should at least tell the audience like what the concept is, though, right?
No,
there's no harm in that.
It's just a thing.
Yeah,
you think so? Well, that wouldn't make any sense. Like, what do you think about this thing that you don't know?
Okay, so for the audience to have context, Graham is looking at another alternative asset.
I love alternative investments.
Another alternative asset. Asset that, let's just say it's Graham. Let's just say it's Graham.
I hit hard on those alternative investments.
It probably is what
well.
You think it is. It probably is what you think
if
it is.
If you think it is, it definitely is that. Yeah, just whatever you think.
Graham just likes alternative investments because he doesn't have to see the price go down on a daily basis like you do stocks or something like that.
It's part of the appeal of NFTs.
Yeah, it sold 2 years ago for blah, blah, blah price, so it's worth, you know, basis now. But anyways, Alex, what do you think about this? I want to hear your opinion.
I mean, I wouldn't do it.
But.
Wouldn't do it.
Okay, Alex, this is a great question for me to ask you. We talked about watches, right, as alternative assets. If you knew you can get on a list for some fancy watch, right, and you knew you could even spend 90% of your net worth on something that you knew was going to quadruple at the moment you sold it, would you jump on that?
Yeah, now I would do it. If you asked me, let's say like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I would not do it. So, and the only reason I would say is like being around you guys, y'all are crazy, but you know, seeing everybody make moves, it's like it just, you surround yourself with a different kinds of people who kind of I don't know, you are kind of who you're around, right? And so now I wouldn't be as afraid to go in it. But if you asked me 2 years ago, when I'm working a job at the bank and my wife has a job and we're just living this like regular life, I'd probably be like, I'll probably pass on
that. That's such a great point, because I think I would be in the exact same shoes. If before I started YouTube, before I started making a big income, I think I would have said the exact same thing.
Yeah, I would have said, why would I put my money into that when I had a wedding business at the time? I'd be like, why wouldn't I just put it into marketing?
Well, you're just so risk averse. Like, imagine investing 90% of your net worth into an alternative asset. Just like, no, I'm all right.
Yeah, but now, no, like, if I had an opportunity, let's say, like, a watch or something like that, I would probably do that.
That's cool.
But for you guys, I'm telling you.
Undisclosed investment.
Oh.
Oh. Oh.
This thing, I'm telling you.
Okay.
I would do it.
Okay.
Because, Jeremy. Scared money don't make money.
Yeah, I noticed. Yeah,
I noticed.
Jeremy, I think
I have zero ambition to buy watches or.
I think if you bought this and held on to it for 10 years, I would realistically see you doubling to tripling your investment.
That would be bad. I would never invest
to triple your money in 10 years.
Never invest in anything I can only triple in 10 years. And plus, I think it's probably.
I tried.
You can't sell me on alternatives. I'm stocks and real estate. Like, the closest thing to an alternative I have is flipping flapjack and silver.
No, Pokemon.
Oh,
I don't
that's
even look at that
right.
as an investment. That's, just
that's not fair. That's
come
a
on,
big
Jeremy.
One.
That's just fun.
Bro, you spent 24 grand on that.
Yeah, that's just playing around.
What?
That's playing around.
Pokemon.
The base set booster
He's
box.
He's got a base set booster box.
Which I'm always tempted to open.
Wait, tell me, what convinced Jeremy to be like, yes, Pokemon?
It was cool.
Okay.
I think if you own one of those boxes, I think it's cool. Obviously, the Ultimate is a first edition, let's be honest. But I think I think just to own one of those boxes, because you know there's a very limited amount still out there. And they're never going to, and no disrespect to like Rolex or Ferraris or, you know, cars, whatever. But it's like, they're always going to make more Rolexes in these things.
No, they'll make more Pokemon cards, but not
true.
That one. But
that's
they won't
a
make,
good point. You got a good
They
point,
won't make okay. more Ferrari Testarossas from
that's
1990.
True. Right? That's a good point, Graham. You got me there.
Did you know Pokemon is the most valuable brand in the world?
No, what?
Yes.
Well, based on what though?
Market cap.
Really?
Yes.
What's the number?
I don't remember what the number is, but it's the most more valuable than any IP in the world. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, we learn something new every day. But yeah, so I mean, sometimes, but that's the thing for me. That's like, I bought that. I didn't buy it as an investment. I mean, cool. If it appreciates and someday it's worth $50,000 or $100,000, like, cool. But I just bought it because it's cool. You know what I mean? Right. It's like, that's
well, cool isn't this cool, this other investment?
I don't think so.
You don't think it's cool?
No, Dan, I don't want to disrespect it because I know you just, you know, got
I don't think it's cool.
A thing.
Andre, I'm telling you.
I think
you,
it's
man.
Cool.
I'm telling you.
I think it's
it.
Redundant.
Yeah. What if you do it?
I thought about it, but I'm looking at, bleep this out, Alex.
No.
What? It's a great one.
It's fine, but this is
it's
on
for
a,
peasants, Andre.
This is on a different level.
It is on a different level. It also costs on a different level.
I think when you look at the appreciation side by side, this, I think...
Don't you think that market is going to soften, though?
No.
What?
No.
It's exploded. Mm-mm. It's going to go down.
No. When you get into the emotions of collectibles...
That's a good one.
What did you say, Jeremy?
Nothing.
No, what did Jeremy say? What did Jeremy say? I'm going to play it back now. You may
yeah,
as well.
Just play it back. Play
no,
it back.
Just tell me what it is
no,
and
no,
then
no,
I may
no,
as well...
You're going to have to watch the well. Episode, Graham. You'll be able to rewind it.
Alex didn't hear it.
Yeah, you guys will hear it.
Andre? He's not going to respond to it.
My lips are sealed, man.
Yeah.
Anyway, when you get into the collectible aspect, you appeal to such a small subset of people
yeah.
that the price in the market doesn't make as big of a difference as how many other people have this one. And the one that I'm talking about here, there's 100 of them that exist in the world. And of those 100, it has a pedigree that just doesn't exist.
That's fair.
So
I guess I don't know enough to be as confident as you.
I mean, I'll say this. You want to sell it 24 hours, not going to happen.
Right.
You want to sell it within 3 months.
Right.
It'll take some time to find that right person. But when you do, it will be the only thing that they want.
Mm.
That's the thing when I think you get into these things, you know, these alternative assets, if we want to call them that, right, is... To me, it might mean nothing, but to somebody else, it means everything.
Right.
Right. Like, that is so cool to them. So something like that, if, you know, somebody's a big fan of that and, you know, both those things together could be like, that's like the most valuable thing in the world to them.
Yeah.
But everybody's got different things they want to buy. Crypto, you know, you could offer me Ethereum at 1100. I might be like,
You sound like Warren Buffett, man.
Yeah, somebody else is like, Ethereum's like going to be
Warren
10,
Buffett's
000.
Like, if Bitcoin was all worth $100, I wouldn't
I can't
pay that.
Offer you guys a chef.
Oh, that's a good
share.
Accent.
$6, I give you the chef, and you're like, nah, I'm good. I give you a $4, you're like, oh, I'm good. $1, yeah. I'm good. I don't need the chef, you know, because you don't
$1,
value it.
$1, I would buy it at $1.
No, you wouldn't. You still wouldn't. 50 cents, you'd be
my,
like,
you know what? My goal would be to own more shares than you, but like just to buy it at like a significantly lower price.
Oh, Andre, that's mean.
I know. But yeah. Like, imagine if I like put in 50 grand and I own more shares. That would be messed up.
That, I thought about an individual who could get me there. I'm not going to mention it. But yeah, anyways, yeah.
What does that mean? No.
Jeremy asked me about a loan.
Everybody values things differently.
Wait, Jeremy, like serious question.
Yes.
How big of a shareholder are you in the chef? Objectively, like amongst the shareholders.
I'm curious
of the company.
About that too.
That's a good question. Of an individual?
Yeah.
I don't know anybody that owns more shares than me.
Well,
but
couldn't you look at the market cap, how many shares are outstanding, and say that I own X percent of the company?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's under 1%.
It's under 1%.
Yeah, under 1%.
But is it over 0.5%?
I'd have to do the math. I don't know. I'll let you guys know in next week's episode.
Well, what do you think is the number one? The board, or who would be the number one?
Sam Galletti, the one that's the CEO of the company, owns the most shares.
How much is he on? 50%?
No, it's not quite that much. It's a pretty substantial number, though. But there's another company I own that I might have a bigger chunk of ownership in.
Okay.
But anyways, I don't even want to mention that one.
Oh, wow. Okay, so here we go. Well, here's literally the answer here. Jeremy could see how he stacks up. The top 10 shareholders of Tattooed Chef... BlackRock owns 2.7 million shares.
Oh, geez.
Okay. Vanguard Group owns 3%.
There's no mirrors back here, right?
No, there's not. Goldman Sachs owns 0.78%. Morgan Stanley owns 0.68%. So, Jeremy,
okay, bust out your calculator real quick here.
Well, just tell me how many. I mean, it shows how many shares they have. If you tell me, yeah.
I got like a bunch of different shares. I need you to add up.
All right. Well, so far we got 88,000.
That's worse than inflation.
1,030 shares. And that's about all I could find right
so,
now.
So let's we'll round it up. We'll say you have 90,000 shares of Tattooed Chef.
Okay.
So that, yeah, I mean, you're not anywhere close. So
I need to get buy-in.
So it takes 500,000 shares to get 0.6%. 500,000.
That's the number.
Whoa. So you're at probably 0.1, probably.
I need to get going, man. I haven't been buying enough shares. You're not even anybody until you own at least a 500,000 shares
of the
shop.
Do you know your average cost?
Oh, gosh. It's probably like 16, 17.
No way.
Yeah, it's way high compared to where it's at.
What is it at right
maybe
now?
15? I think 7.
Okay.
Yeah, 7, 8, somewhere around there. So, yeah, I need to get a lot of more shares. Thanks, Graham. That was gave me motivation.
That's
going
cool.
for a 500,000 shares. Can't get a loan? Guys.
Can you guarantee me the 25?
Yeah, how much? Well, let's just see really quick what that would cost to get. So, let's say you need 400,000 more shares.
Okay.
What's the cost right now?
$7? $2.8 million?
So $7, yeah, $2.8 million is how much it would take.
Man. Problem is, there's so many stocks that are cheap that I keep buying all these other
stocks. Imagine seeing Jeremy's name. It's like you see Vanguard, BlackRock.
That would be Jeremy, awesome.
Jeremy Lefebvre.
Dude. That would be sick. Can we please make that your goal?
That's my goal now.
That's cool.
Oh my gosh.
I need to start making some money.
It just has like a hyperlink, like a subscribe. Like.
That would be my claim to fame.
Oh my gosh.
For sure. Like,
dude, Jeremy, would you sell all the other shares and just put it all into Tattooed
Chef? No, it'd be such a bad example. It'd be such a bad example. And plus, if things were to go bad with the chef, you know what I mean?
It's what about like, yeah? What about Planet 13?
But Jeremy,
yeah.
Diversification is just a proxy for ignorance.
That's true.
Are you not committed?
Jeremy, I have a question. If you had the option to sell out of the shelf right now at your cost basis, would you do it?
Well, I mean,
he's gonna say no.
Well, can I buy it back the same day for $7 or $8?
No, you got to be out of the shelf forever.
I could never own the shelf.
No,
again.
Never.
Then I wouldn't.
Man, yep. Privately, he's like, I would.
All right, so I was looking up the biggest shareholders of Planet 13. This is on Yahoo Finance.
Ooh, I got a lot of shares of that one.
Guess what?
What?
The top stock that people also watch, Tattooed Chef.
No way.
On Yahoo Finance.
I guarantee you, you've had influence on that.
And don't tell me Corsair Gaming's on that as well.
No.
Imagine Corsair's on it and then...
Now, all the other ones are all dispensary companies, but the number one is Tattooed Chef. It's like you would think other people look at Green Lab Industries. It's like, okay, Cannabis Corp. Tattooed Chef is number one.
Go to TTCF and see if there's any correlation there.
Okay. I'm on Robinhood right now.
Yeah.
I'm under TTCF, okay? Yeah. And underneath there's a thing where it says people also
own. Yeah,
this list is based on the portfolios of people on Robinhood who own TTCF. It's not an investment recommendation. It says here Corsair Gaming.
No way.
The Honest Company. Palantir Technologies.
Okay,
dude, that's your portfolio. Okay.
I don't own Palantir
he doesn't
right
own
now
Palantir.
But I do talk about Palantir
and then that's it because then it's just Dropbox. Okay. You know,
Dropbox I own. Yep.
Dude, Walgreens is on here. But
Walgreens, I used to have $1 million.
Smile Direct Club.
Yeah,
what?
That's a very small position, but
those are down
something.
The you know those are down, I had to scroll a little bit.
If you guys want to wrap it up, Warren Buffett's top 4 stock picks in inflation. Did you see that list?
What is it?
It was Amex, Chevron, Coca-Cola, and Apple.
Oh, those are pretty much his 4 biggest investments.
Yeah,
but they've
well,
been his
I like
four
them.
Biggest for a long time.
Those are great.
Time.
Yeah, I
own those. Yeah.
I agree with them. I mean, I don't see anything wrong. Amex is a fantastic company, too.
Yeah.
I like Amex
Sweet.
A lot.
Sweet. Well, with that said, not that financial said. Advice, but...
thank you, guys, so much for watching. We'll link to FTX US down below in the description. Again, use the code MMFTX if you want to support the channel. Make sure to subscribe, hit the like button, and until next week.
Peace.
With Chime Secure Credit Card, you can start improving your credit scores with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments. Get started at Chime.com/build. The Chime Credit Builder Visa Credit Card is issued by Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Results may vary. See Chime.com for details. Terms and conditions apply. Go to Chime.com/disclosures for details.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.